So Simcha Wasserman took a very good look at took a very good look at his generation, the generation that came right after the Holocaust, and he realized the greatness that he could tap into, that there was some greatness there. But he also saw some major pitfalls that would be there as well. And this piece that I'm taking from Rav Simcha really describes the feeling that he felt when he saw the new generation being raised, an American-born yeshiva bacher who, and Maidaleh, we'll call it, who grew up without the hardships of Europe in an affluent society and dealing with the things that he was dealing with. And he starts off like this. He says, anyone who worships an idol, by definition, is not looking for something to serve. He's looking for something to serve him. That's what he wants. It's all about himself. It has nothing to do what the other thing is. The Egyptians worshipped their animals and the Nile River because that's what gave them their source of income. That's where their parnassah came from. Everything came, their food, everything that their sustenance was based on was on the Nile River and the food that they ate, whether it was the food that they ate directly or the pishtun, the flax that they were involved with their linen, their exports. It was something like that. They turned what they needed into a god, into something special. That changed it for them. And that's the meaning of the phrase in the beginning of this week's parsha, Uparo Omed Al Ya'or, that Ovdei Avodah Zarah stand on their gods. It's themselves with their gods beneath them. They're important, they become something chashuv, and their gods are below them. In this sense, we have another answer to the question that we asked weeks ago. What does it mean that when Avraham Avinu saw the Malachim coming, he made them wash their feet to get the dust of their feet off? And Rashi says, they worship the ground of their feet, the ground that their feet were on. What does that mean? Well, it's obvious now. They worshiped what was underneath them. That means it could be any Avodah Zarah. But the point was, they were on top of their god. Lowercase g. They considered themselves more chashuv. They were the ones who were more important. Rabbi Yochanan says in the Medrash, when it says paro omed al yor, he says harashayim miskayimin al Eloheihem. That the rishayim are miskayim. They exist al Eloheihem, on top of their gods, above their own gods. They only expect their gods to give them what they want. Not to demand anything from them, or to make rules, or to ask them for something. They want the power that those gods represent to give to them whatever they need. Regarding Yaakov Avinu, very different. When Yaakov Avinu saw the dream, B'nei Hashem Nitzav Olav, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was upon him, was on top of him. That's the idea. When Klal Yisrael asked for a king, Chazal go crazy. What's Klal Yisrael doing? Why are they asking for a king? Shmuel and Avi says, they're rejecting me. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, no, they're not rejecting you, they're rejecting me. But why? The Pasuk says when you ask for a king. It seems to be obvious in Shoftim that you should ask for a king. And it's even a mitzvah saseh midoraisa to ask for a king. It's not just stama thing. You're supposed to ask for a king. You're mekayim a mitzvah by asking for a king. So what was the problem? What was the issue in asking for the king? Difference is, says the Kli Yakar, in how you ask for it. The way they asked for it, they said, give us, lanu, a melech. The way you should be asking for it is, aleinu, a melech. That the melech should be upon us. If the melech is on top of you, if the melech is in charge and you're beneath, that means the king is making all the decisions and you're subservient to him, then all of a sudden you have a king, a real king. But when they said, give us a king, lanu, let the king be on par with us, or let us demand from the kings what we want, then that's just another form of Avodah Zarah. You're asking for someone powerful to give you what you need. And it's about you. It's not about anybody else. That's the difference between those two over here. The idea is that when a person has a god, it should be someone that's above him. And maybe that's the reason why we wear a kippah on top of our heads. To constantly remind us that it's not us on top of our gods. We put Haman in the bottom of our shoes. We have a kippah on top of our heads to remind us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is above us, on top of us, ruling over us. Hinei Hashem Nitzav Olav, not Paro Omed Al Ya'or. But someone who worships idols doesn't think that way. They only pay attention to what they can get out of it, what they can gain. And for that reason, many religions have multiple gods. many gods, each one serving a different purpose. The American Indians, for example, had many gods, again, lowercase g, in which they worshipped whatever they felt they needed to at that time. The Egyptians, quite often there was Ra, there were the other gods that were in charge, but for the most part, they had different gods that represented different things, different masks, different deities that they felt would be powerful for that time. If they gain from it, then it's their god. And if there's nothing to gain from it at the time, then he's not their god. There's no reason to worship the god of rain during the summer. There's no reason to worship the god of sun in the winter. It's the opposite. You should be worshiping the other to get what you need. It's like this idea of what the Avodah Zarah go through. It's like someone who goes into Macy's and picks up a pair of $600 shoes. Now he knows that the owner of those of this store, of the Macy's store, is not going to be sympathetic. So instead of going to the owner, he goes straight to one of the cash register people. He knows they're not being paid that much. And he goes up to him and starts, or her, and starts sweet-talking the attendant. Starts saying, hey, how are you? How's everything going? You've been working here for a while. It starts, you know, going on a little bit. And as he goes on, he starts saying, like, oh, I saw this pair of shoes. These are amazing. I was wondering, they're not on sale, are they? Can you get it on sale? Is there a way where we can somehow make a deal and get a little bit off and move it down a little bit? And he starts haggling, but it's not Jewish haggling, you know, where you're expecting him to, I can't go for less than, nothing like that. It's more of a, can we get 50% off? How could we do that exactly? And he starts red tagging or whatever and stuff like that. The guy thinks that that's going to be enough. And then once he speaks to that person, and the person's like, sure, I'll give it to you for 50% off, then he thinks that he's perfectly fine. Bribes the person a little bit, gives them whatever they need, whatever it is, right? And when he walks out of the store with this $600 pair of shoes that he just got for $250, he thinks, I just hoodwinked the owner. The owner has no idea that I just stole $450 out of his store, $350 out of his store, without him knowing about it. He didn't even realize what I just did. What the guy doesn't realize is that there are video cameras everywhere throughout the store. And there are security guards that are watching every single video camera. And that the attendants are told, the people at the cash register are told, if somebody starts haggling you and tries to get you to give it to them at a cheaper price, give it to them, let them walk out of the store, we're going to take care of it. And when the guy is walking out of the store with the $600 pair of shoes, thinking, look what I just did to the owner, the security guards surround him, grab him, and say, we saw what you did, get back in the store, put it on a blacklist, he can never come into the store ever again. See, that's the concept. And Ovid of Avodah Zarah thinks he can get past the owner and go to the intermediaries, the malach in charge of rain, the malach that's in charge of sun, the malach that's in charge of X, Y, and Z. And then if I go to the intermediaries, I don't have to worry about a Kadosh Baruch Hu. The owner doesn't really care so much. He's not paying attention. But a Kadosh Baruch Hu has malachim, mashchisim, that are taking care of everything and every single video camera in the store watching everything. And it's not when you're in the store that he cares. It's when you walk out of the store after a person passes away, when all of a sudden everything gets thrown back on him and he's blacklisted. That's what happens to such a person. That's the mushel as to how you can understand it. But this is the way people think, and this is the way our egos work, that we can fool everybody else. I can do it. I will be able to do it. I'll be able to get past the man, and I'll be able to do what I need, because all I'll do is I'll hoodwink, I'll get around the other thing. I don't need the ultimate power. I just need small little powers, and as long as I take care of the peons, then I'll have it made. I'll be able to do whatever I want. I'll be able to do anything I can. Well, the truth is, you can. That's called Avodah Zarah. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu put it within the realm of this world to do that. And you can do whatever you want. You have your Bechira. You could choose to do anything. You could fool anyone you want to, even yourself, into thinking you're doing the right thing, and end off with almost nothing. Someone above is taking care of you, and you're not thinking about it. You're not realizing it. You're just going on thinking, I can do what I need to do. Our service has to be completely different. It's not about the intermediaries. It's not about fooling the people who could be fooled. Like, look what I was able to do to the Mashkiach. Look how I was able to get my Rebbe to admit that I should be able to go to this place and the other place. It's, are you really fooling HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Is that what you're doing? Do you really think that what you're doing right now is the right thing to do? Sure, your Rebbe has to give in to you. Your Mashkiach has no choice but to give you what you want. Is that what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants? Do you really think you're fooling HaKadosh Baruch Hu with your actions or what you're doing? Or is this just another form of Avodah Zarah? It's amazing. Obviously, we need to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu for certain things. And there are times and places for us to do that. We have tefillah for that reason. And tefillah is made for us to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu for anything we need. And it's all in there. You need refuah, you need parnasa, you need a little bit more help, you need to be smarter, you need to do well on a test. It's all in there in some form of Shmoneh Esrei. You just have to find it. But that's not the purpose of tefillah. Tefillah is not the way Obdi Avodah Zarah think. That tefillah is just, I ask for what I want and God grants my request. That's an Obdi Avodah Zarah thought. That's what tefillah is for somebody who only believes in idols. What is tefillah? Tefillah is a mitzvah. A mitzvah says, same midioraisa, that we have to daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Along with that, we're given a gift that you can also ask for things while we daven. But you have a chiyuv to daven, period. And within that, there can be requests. You are also allowed to ask for something. If a person uses his tefillah, and uses is the correct word here, uses his tefillah just in order to ask what he needs to ask and get what he needs to get, that is pure and utter, unadulterated Avodah Zarah. That's what it means. That's the definition. You're just asking for anything you want and expecting a Kadosh Baruch Hu to give it to you. Because listen, I asked. I didn't have to ask. If I wouldn't have asked, what's the difference? Right? I didn't need to. Since I did something, you should be able to give it to me. It's like when I was a first-year guy in Beis Yisrael, and they made a rule, because a lot of guys were going out at night, and they said, if you want to go out, you need to ask permission to go out. If you want to leave for night seder, you need to ask permission beforehand. So I went up to one of the rabbis, and I said, I want to know, can I go out? Can I go out for night seder tonight? So I was a good kid. There were lots of kids that didn't ask, but I asked. And they told me, no. And my argument back was, I didn't need to ask you. I didn't need to ask you. I could have just gone. You wouldn't have known. You wouldn't have said anything. And everything would have been fine. It's not like you're taking attendance. So the fact that I asked means you should say yes. And remember, you looked right at me and said, the fact that you asked expecting to get a yes as an answer means you never asked. I wanted you to ask, not tell me what you were going to do. And I got it. He's right. I wasn't planning on asking. I was planning on telling him, this is what I'm doing. And when you're just telling him what you're going to do, you're not asking a question. It's not a shiloh. That is a tshuva. That's exactly the way any apikoros asks the question. Is there really a God? He's not asking a question. He's telling you, I don't believe in God, and I don't care about what you're about to tell me. So if a person says, I'm not going to be in yeshiva today, is that a question? Are you asking me that I'm not going to be in yeshiva, or you're telling me I'm not going to be in yeshiva today? You're asking me or you're telling me? Which one is it? And if it's asking me, I understand. Sometimes I get the right to say yes, sometimes I get the right to say no. If you're telling me, fine, you're just like an Obed Avodah Zarah. You're expecting everything to go your way. It's not about anyone else. It's just expected to be, this is what I want. And if you don't give in to me, well, that's it. You're a terrorist. There's no way to negotiate with them. What do you want me to do? But if I tell you no, then what? Well, I'm not taking no as an answer. Then you weren't asking a question. You were stating a statement. The ikur behind tefillah, behind all of tefillah, is really benching. Because tefillah confuses you. Tefillah makes you think that it's all about you. That you get to ask. My recognition, my ability to say something to God, my asking for something and sometimes getting something back and sometimes not. And sometimes it gets confusing. People don't like tefillah because they don't feel there's a connection there because they're expecting to get what they want. They didn't get it, so forget it. I don't want to daven. But what about benching? What's in benching? Is benching about you? Or is benching all about a Kadosh Baruch Hu? See, benching is the literal definition of what it means to do a deoraisa for the sake of the deoraisa. You're thanking a Kadosh Baruch Hu after you eat. It's not about getting food. It's not even about getting more food. It's thanking a Kadosh Baruch Hu, period. There's no requests. There's nothing like that. And I realize the harachamans might get into requests. And maybe that's why the Gra didn't like saying them. But the idea of benching, of Azonis to Olam Kulo, you're the one who gave all parnassah to everything. Thank you, Hashem, for the land, for my food, for everything. And then Yerushalayim, Eretz Yisrael, you allowed people to be buried after they were dead. That's what Atov Vametiv is. The unbelievable God. There's no requests. That is pure tefillah. That's the concept of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted. Because we're weak, we ask for things in our tefillah. But that's our weakness. That's not what tefillah is. Tefillah is a requirement, and benching is a requirement. They're done in two different ways. You want a relationship? You gain a relationship by going up to a parent and saying, I appreciate what you did. I thank you for what it is. And one time, you do that without asking for something in return. That you go up to your parents and you say, I really appreciate everything you've done. If the dad or mom says to you, all right, what do you want? Then you know you failed. You failed as a child. Going up to his parent, and the parent automatically expects you to ask for something right after that. What kind of relationship is that? You want something, you want that real relationship with a parent? It's you call just to say hi. You call just to say thank you. To appreciate the fact that you have a father and a mother who care about you. And that's it. If you're only calling to request for more, that's not a relationship. That's an abusive relationship on your part. And that's the idea. The idea of what you're saying with the Kadosh Baruch Hu is that tefillah and benching should be about not you, about having that relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. And then we're lucky enough, if he's a really good parent, to give us what we want. So try it once. Try a tefillah where you never ask for a single thing. And I don't mean because you're spaced out like a monkey, and in the middle of your Shemoneh Esrei, all of a sudden you realize you're already at Modim, and you forgot to ask for something. That's not what I mean. I mean, go through Hashiveinu, and instead of thinking, I hope I do better, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, don't ask for a thing. Read the words, say them, and don't ask for anything personal. Ask for Klal Yisrael. Slak Lanu. And don't think only about yourself. Take on Klal Yisrael. Rifa'enu, someone you don't know who's sick. Not someone who's actually sick that you know. For someone else. And Berech Aleinu, try a Shemoneh Esrei without that. And if you tell me, what do you mean? I'm davening for somebody sick. Okay. If you have never been through a Rifa'enu and not spaced out through a Rifa'enu, I applaud you, and you shouldn't be here. You should be a Rosh Hashiva at the Mir. You should do that. Until that point happens, take one Shemoneh Esrei and try this. Try to do it with no thoughts of yourself. And try to have a Shemoneh Esrei that way, because that really is the mitzvah. That is the pure mitzvah. And this is what it means to go out and doing something like that, to understand what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants from us. Now, in that sense, that relationship that we're creating with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, where it's no longer abusive, where we finally are saying what we like about our parents, and we're not just asking and begging and getting something back, on a higher level, the realization that everything you have comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu only makes you stronger. So what's the difference between us and them? Us and the Ovdei Avodah Zarah. The Ovdei Avodah Zarah define what it means to be takers. They are takers. They only grab. They take what they need and they leave what they don't. And if you demand something from them, there's nothing there for them. We, by definition, are givers. It's all about giving and trying to do something more for the person that you're taking from. Every time somebody gives something to you, you should automatically want to write a thank you note back. It should automatically be there. It shouldn't be like your bar mitzvah where you're 13 years old and you don't know what's going on in life, and somebody gives you a gift and you're like, I deserve it. I leaned. And they're giving you $36 and you're like, that's not enough. I'd like 50 or 100. It'd be better if it's 300. It's no longer your bar mitzvah. You're old enough. Where every time you get, you give back. That's what it means to not be an Ovdei Avodah Zarah. Obviously, we're born the way to be takers. Instinctively, as babies, we can't give anything but our cuteness. And the truth is, when they're little tiny babies and look like little crushed raisins, it's not, the cuteness is definitely relative. As time goes on, you stop being a taker and you start being a giver. And as you go on and on and on, you come to the point where you're able to give so much that you can then go back to being a taker. And it's not a problem anymore. It's where we expect you to be an absolute taker. When you get old enough, where others are giving to you and you can't give back. Because you worked on yourself so much to become a giver, you can't do anything else. I have a story, but I'm not going to skip the story for right now. A child thinks that all he needs to do is go to a mekubel, and he'll be handed whatever he needs. Go to a rabbi. What's the lottery numbers, rabbi? Just give me the lottery numbers. If you give me that, I'll never bother you ever again. That's the reason why the rabbi doesn't want to give you the lottery tickets. Or, this is a scary way, I just need Mashiach to come, and then everything will work out. Everything will be fine once Mashiach comes. That is a baby. That's a little kid that just wants to take and take and take and never give back. Mashiach's going to come, I'll be saved. Everything will be fine. I don't have to worry about anything. There's nothing I have to give to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He just has to give me. That is Avodah Zarah. To think of Mashiach in those terms is absolutely Avodah Zarah. For you to say, what do I need to do in order to deserve for Mashiach to come? That's what it means to be a Jew. That's what it means to really be around. It's to feel that you're doing things not because you have to, but because you want to give back. Not because you're expecting something back, but to really give. So what does it mean to go to a makobel? It's not to go to a makobel and say, daven for me, give me something that I need. That's not what a makobel is there for, or a navi of what they had back in the day. The point of going to any of these things is, what do I need to do to deserve to be the person that gets this? What do I need? Great story with Rav Druk. And I know not everybody holds of Rav Druk, it's whatever, but this is a great story. I went to Rav Druk for somebody. The guy came to me and said, I don't believe in Rav Druk anymore. I said, why not? He said, he told me I was going to have a new job. I was going to have a new job by Sukkot, and I didn't get the new job. So I said, all right. It was a couple months after Sukkot. I went to Rav Druk. I gave him the guy's name. I said, you told this person he was going to have a new job. He didn't get the new job. So Rav Druk looked at me. Scary when he does something like this. Looked at me in the eye and says, he knows what he did. That's what he told me. He looked at the name, looked at me, says, he knows what he did. So I went back to the guy, I called him up right after I got out of the meeting, and I said to him, he said, Rav Druk said, you know what you did. So the guy's like, all right. That was it. He got a new job 3 months later. This guy got a new job, perfect job for him, 3 months later. Absolute perfect job. He loves his job. Absolutely. It's one of the craziest things. Again, it's not about just taking and taking and taking. Going to the makobel and expecting him to say, like, oh, you're going to be a billionaire. That's not what's going to happen. What do I need to do in order to be that billionaire? What do I need to do? Where am I going? What's the next level for me? Should I be working on this? Should I be working on that? That's the concept of what it means. Otherwise, that's what Avodah Zarah stood for. You go to somebody, a priest who is there, he gives you a little Hail Mary, and everything works out in the end. And then all of a sudden, you're good. You don't have to worry about anything. You don't have to give anything back. You just took, and everything's all good. So what do we understand from this? Our own service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, our tefillah. What is our tefillah about, and how is our Avodas Hashem? Is that doing it in the way that we're expecting to get what we're getting? That we're only expecting to take? Or are we also involved in the giving? Is it that we're having a real relationship where we give and HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives back? We're taking only because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to give us. And then we say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this is what we think back. We want a relationship to not be an Avodah Zarah Dika relationship. A relationship where Hashem needs of a love. Where He's on top of us as opposed to Paro. This is what we want out of it. Now we have to work. Now we have to really work. How can I give back? What can I do to give back? What can I say? It's going to make it worth it for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to give me what I need, if that's what I need. What do I need to do? Well, that's a relationship. Work it out. Same thing with a wife. Work it out. Figure out what it is. And when you do, then it becomes a perfect relationship. A give-give relationship instead of a take-take relationship. You should be zocher to such things, everyone.